Good afternoon, America. Welcome to Mark Levine's Inside Scoop on Washington, where he brings you all the news from the nation's capital that the government does not want you to know. When a news story came out last weekend that Newsweek had retracted a small part of its story, and frankly a very small section of it, that said that a U.S. official had confirmed the flushing of a Quran, a Muslim holy book, down the toilet. The administration could barely hide its glee. Here was another Dan Rather example. Fox News went on the rampage. Who will be disciplined? Who will be fired at Newsweek? How dare they make up this lie? Was it intentional? And yes, they had a field day. But as usual, when you look in detail exactly what happened here, you see that first of all, Newsweek probably didn't get the story wrong. And secondly, it certainly doesn't deserve all the incredible hand-wringing for an administration that itself lied and incited violence. Now, there's so many parts of this story and so many things to discuss. First of all, I want to encourage you to call in 877-57-SCOOP, 877-57-SCOOP. Comment on the blog at radioinsidescoop.com. So many of you have already commented, and I'll be getting to that. But as I said, there's so many aspects of this story. One, it is clear that we have taken step after step as a country to denigrate the Islamic religion. From George Bush calling it a crusade against Islam to all the right-wingers that he hangs out with, the Washington Times and Ann Coulter. And we are to believe this Newsweek story caused all the violence? It wasn't the torture of the people at Abu Ghraib. It wasn't the putting what the detainees believed to be menstrual blood all over them so they'd be unclean. That's not what caused them to be so upset. In fact, General Myers, the Joint Chiefs of Staff head, the guy who's the head of all of our military in the United States, confirmed in a report that it had nothing to do with the Newsweek story, the riots in Afghanistan. There's so much to this story. There's the fact that the Bush administration hasn't condemned the fact that the Afghani police shot at these unarmed demonstrators. There's the fact that the demonstrators themselves were getting more upset over destruction of a holy book, apparently, than the torture of lives, if that story is true. We do know the administration cared more about this report than they did about the destruction of lives. After all, they're talking a lot about 16 lives, but they're not talking about the tens of thousands that have been killed since our war in Iraq. Oh, the hypocrisy goes on and on. Today we have a case study in hypocrisy. We have a case study in BS. How it is that the administration loves to take one little piece of data out of context and blow it all up to accuse there's a wide liberal media conspiracy. Remember, last week, a week earlier, it also came out in the smoking gun memo that affected a British election. It came out that George Bush had manipulated the facts and intelligence to justify a war that he could not justify, that he lied about weapons of mass destruction. We had always suspected it. We had found indications again and again, both with aluminum tubes from Niger and in other places. But now we had the evidence. We had the smoking gun memo that our administration lied in such a way as to kill 1,600 plus American servicemen and women, to wound more than 10,000, to kill more than 20,000 Iraqi civilians, some say up to 100,000. But this didn't get very much media attention, did it? No, the fact that Newsweek put a small item in its periscope that probably was true, but got a few of the details perhaps wrong, and that Newsweek apologized and retracted it, no, that's the story of the week. So I've got a lot to talk about in this story, and I'm going to take it piece by piece, item by item, to show you, as perhaps you can do in an hour-long program, you can't do this sometimes in a two-minute spin session, exactly how it is that this story, to me, is a perfect example of the incredible hypocrisy of this administration, of the media, and yes, of the radical Islamic people themselves. This, I think, is a story that makes everybody look bad. So let's take at it from the beginning. Let's start. Last Saturday, Newsweek published in its Periscope part. Now, many of us know what the Periscope is. It's not a whole article even. It's just a little kind of a gossipy short section of various little snippets in the news. They reported that the long-standing allegations that, in fact, our people have been destroying Qurans and treating them in a destructive fashion and treating them in an insulting fashion, that, in fact, a senior Pentagon official said that it was going to be in the Pentagon report on the issue. Later on, they contacted the official, and the official said, you know what, I'm sure I read it, but I can't say it's going to be in the Southcom report. Now, that's all the story's about. Let's be clear. There are allegations, repeated allegations, that American servicemen and women have disrespected the Quran before. And again, I think the whole thing is ludicrous. Again, when you think about the fact that we have beaten prisoners to a pulp, we have knocked their heads against metal floors until they've had concussions, we have chained them in fetal positions, we have stuck their heads underwater until they thought they were drowning. These are the things the Bush administration approves of, by the way. And then there were the things that, well, they may or may not have approved of, but it could have been zealous investigators. We don't know. The Bush administration refuses to try anyone higher up. And that, of course, is the electrodes attached to genitalia and the dog collars and all the rest of the tortures, not just at Abu Ghraib, but in Guantanamo Bay, throughout prison camps in Afghanistan and Iraq. Indeed, I just reported last week, I played, in fact, a 60 Minutes report that showed how our investigators, our interrogators, are trained to do what they can to disrespect the Islamic faith as a way to torture these prisoners to get them to talk. So what do? We talked about this last week. They have women go in. It's really kind of sleazy, if you ask me, and wear tight T-shirts and then reach their hands down into their pants and pull out what the prisoner thinks is menstrual blood and drape it all over the prisoner and then refuse to let them wash themselves and say, you know, we're going to keep making you ritually unclean until, you know, you talk. And first of all, these tactics haven't succeeded at all, number one. Number two, we should always remember that most of these prisoners are not al-Qaeda. Some 80, 85% of them are just people who were caught up in all this. And they were brought to Guantanamo Bay. Again, I've reported on this in past broadcasts. And the whole goal was precisely to make them violate their Islamic principles. The whole idea of showing women without the covering required by the strict Muslim faith and to make the men be sexually aroused by these women, and it was to embarrass them, it was to make them feel bad about their faith. Even comments by our military investigators said, you know, don't you feel ritually unclean? Don't you feel as a bad Muslim? Therefore, shouldn't you talk to us? Again, the techniques didn't work, but it is clear that desecrating Islam was part and parcel of the administration's tactic in trying to get these people to talk. So, throwing one Quran down the toilet? Did it happen? My guess is it probably did. And let me give you the evidence that it probably happened, because there's a lot of it. First of all, there's all the testimony of the detainees. Now, I know the argument that they're detainees and they can't be trusted to tell the truth. But again, when you recall that 80-plus percent of these people have no connection to al-Qaeda whatsoever, they're just Afghans that either were drafted into the military or otherwise got caught up in the war or otherwise were turned over to us by the Northern Alliance in Afghanistan. When you think about that, maybe you can give their allegations a little more credibility. Let's go through them, okay? First of all, we have an eyewitness, okay? We have an eyewitness. His name is James Yee. He is an American. He is a former Muslim chaplain at the prison. And yes, he was investigated and cleared of charges of mishandling classified material. He has said that he has seen the guards' mishandling, mistreatment of detainees' Qurans, and in fact, it led the prisoners to launch a hunger strike in March 2002. Did you see that in the news? Did you see the detainees' hunger strike over mistreatment of the Quran? I don't remember seeing it, and I follow these things pretty closely. Now, of course, we have the detainees' lawyers, and what they say the strike only ended when military leaders issued an apology on the public address system where they apologize for mishandling the prisoners' Korans. Now look, that either happened or it didn't. The detainees' lawyers are saying this in public documents. It could be investigated. We could ask. Our people in the military would know whether they issued an apology over a public address system. Maybe our military's position is that they didn't destroy the Korans, but they thought they'd apologize anyway just to calm things down. Maybe that's true. We don't know. The Pentagon won't investigate. And that's going to be something that you hear throughout this discussion, this hour. The Pentagon won't investigate to see if these charges are true. They're just going to attack Newsweek, which, by the way, they never attacked Newsweek when the thing was printed. Newsweek gave them a chance, gave the Pentagon a chance to deny it. They gave the Pentagon a chance to clarify it, to challenge it before it was printed. Pentagon had no problem with it. They didn't have any problem with it even after the riots erupted. They didn't have any problem with it until after Newsweek began its retraction, trying to do the right thing. And then suddenly the Pentagon really cares and says some really nasty things. And I'm going to get to all of that. But let's go back and examine the question. Have our military soldiers destroyed the Quran or otherwise desecrated the Quran while they were doing other things purposely to denigrate the Islamic religion, to try to get people to talk? Well, we have a former army translator at Guantanamo Bay, Eric Saar, who's written a book about the mistreatment of detainees. Now, he said he never saw a Quran flushed in a toilet. Now, let me be clear. He never saw a Quran flushed in a toilet, but he saw guards routinely, that's not just once or twice or 10 times, they routinely would toss the book on the ground while searching cells. Okay, now, for someone in a Muslim faith, that is a gross violation. I can tell you as someone in the Jewish faith that what we do is if our holy books, our siddurs, the things we read our prayers out of, if they land on the ground by accident, we pick them up and kiss them. That's our tradition. And a Torah, the five books of Moses, all right, this is Genesis through Deuteronomy. This is handwritten by a scribe on these large rolls that many of you have probably seen called a Torah. Now, if that lands on the ground, I believe the ruling is, and I'm not a scholar in this, but my understanding is that makes the Torah unkosher. And it may even mean that this very expensive item, which costs tens of thousands of dollars because it's all written in hand by a scribe who can't make too many mistakes, that the whole thing can't be used anymore. So Jews are also quite strict about this. I don't think they'd advocate killing someone because of it, and that's one of the criticisms I have for the Muslims. I do think that's wildly outrageous. But obviously, we respect our holy books, so do the Muslims, and the guards routinely threw them on the ground. Now, is there a difference between throwing them on the ground or throwing them in a toilet? Perhaps. But there's no one contesting that they've been thrown on the ground. And we have numerous detainees who have told us, not just one, not just two, five, 10, 20 detainees, each of which have said in Guantanamo Bay, in Afghanistan, in Iraq, that not only were the Korans tossed on the floor, they were stepped on. They were placed in latrines. Aryat Vahitov said on Russian television, quote, they tore the Koran to pieces in front of us, threw it into the toilet, unquote. Now, what did Newsweek say? Newsweek said in its little Periscope article that a senior government official said that in an upcoming report on mistreatment of detainees, that that would be confirmed in this Southcom report. It would be confirmed that there was at least one incident of someone flushing a Quran down a toilet. Then, after the riots, Newsweek went back and checked with the person, the senior government official who did the article, all right? And what did this government official said? What he said is, it may have been in another document, but apparently it wasn't in the Southcom report. That's all they got wrong. It wasn't in the Southcom document, it was in another report. So they asked the Pentagon. They said to the Pentagon, well, would it have been in the Southcom report if it happened? What did the Pentagon say? Again, you have to draw all these things together. The Pentagon said, quote, it was never meant to look into charges of Quran desecration. Did you get that? Because I think it bears repeating. The official said, well, I think it's going to be in the Southcom report. I've heard of the incident. I read it happened somewhere. I think it's going to be in this particular report. Newsweek prints it. Then they go back, they check the official, and he says, you know what? It didn't appear in that report. I'm sure I read it somewhere, but it didn't appear in that specific report. So they go to the Pentagon. They say to the Pentagon, well, should it have been in that report? And the Pentagon says, quote, it was never meant to look into charges of Quran desecration, unquote. So is the story true? Well, the senior official apparently seems to back it up. Newsweek has not retracted what the senior official said about Quran desecration. It's just not in a particular report. This is the tiny little piece, the tiny mistake that Newsweek made that is being brought to everyone's attention as some horrible, horrible liberal media bias. What else? Well, we have Pentagon spokesman asked, this is Lawrence T. Derrida, about the prior detainee allegations. He says, we never investigated these questions by the detainees. We never investigated whether the lawyers the detainees saying were true. We didn't consider them credible. Well, my friend, or my not-so-friend, Pentagon spokesman Lawrence D. Rita, you know what? You won't know if the allegations are credible unless you investigate. Now, that may sound elementary, but apparently Mr. Derrida needs a little bit of explanation here. He said, they came from detainees, they came from detainees' lawyers, we didn't consider them credible, we didn't investigate. Now comes the Southcom report. Again, we never looked into Quran desecration. You want to know what I think happened? I think it's pretty obvious what happened. The Pentagon has heard stories about Quran desecration, and so when Newsweek reported it, they didn't contest it. They didn't have any problem with it. They thought it was probably true. It was going to be in some small story. No one would really take notice of it. Then come the riots. The riots, which were initially reported, had to do with Newsweek's story, but our government, the Joint Chiefs of Staff, the highest military official in the U.S. government, General Myers, says, you know what? It didn't have anything to do with the Newsweek story. And again, the Pentagon is silent. But then Newsweek finds it made a small mistake. It wasn't going to appear in this particular government report. They back off that, and aha, they have found the chink in the media's armor. They have found the Achilles heel they can go after in a widespread campaign, and that they did. I'm going to get to more on this after the break. There are also some people hanging on. Keep hanging on the line. I promise I'll get to your calls. The toll-free number is 877-57-SCOOP, 877-57-SCOOP, or you can write on the blog at radioinsidescoop.com. Back with your calls and more details of the Newsweek story, because you know what? The devil really is in the details. And when you realize the details of this story, I think you'll be as outraged as I am. We'll be right back after these messages.
Good game, Mike.
Thanks. Hey, by the way, how was the doctor the other day?
Good, but my cholesterol's 200. It's a little high.
Yeah, I'm around 760.
760? You're kidding me.
Pretty impressive, huh?
No, not impressive. Not impressive at all. What are you on, some sort of butter diet?
Yeah, you know, I figured at 760, getting a loan on the new car should be no problem.
Loan? What are you talking about, man? You're not going to live long enough to pay back a loan.
There's physical health, and then there's financial health. With ScorePower from Equifax, you'll get your credit report, credit score, and you'll learn how your credit decisions can affect your score, all for just $14.95. It's the first step toward healthy credit, and a score of 760 is pretty healthy. So check out ScorePower at Equifax.com or call 1-877-4-EQUIFAX. That's EQUIFAX. Equifax.
Yeah, I figure I can get up to around 790 by the end of the year, you know, if I'm lucky.
Look, a little advice.
Yeah?
Eat a vegetable, a smoothie, something, man.
Get the power. Score power at Equifax.com.
Your dog eats your new sofa. Pet satisfaction rating 3%. Your hairdresser doesn't know burnt auburn from burnt toast. Hair color satisfaction rating 5%. After years of marriage, your husband still leaves the seat up. Spouse satisfaction rating minus 2%. Your car insurance company saves you hundreds of dollars and handles your claim quickly and fairly. Car insurance satisfaction rating 97%. Oh, you must have Geico.
Geico's customer satisfaction stands at 97%. How would you rate your car insurance company? Geico. 1-800-947-AUTO.
It's night. You have heartburn. You want fast relief. Zantac works fast. When first used, Prilosec OTC works not so fast. Zantac works right when you need it.
Hello, relief.
Prilosec's label says it may take 1 to 4 days to fully work. So, what would you choose?
Estimated time of relief, 1 to 4 days.
Prilosec, nah. Zantac's for people who hate to wait, especially at night. Use as directed.
I have these nightmares. This taco, not just an ordinary taco, but this big evil taco is haunting me.
Guacamole.
You see, I was exposed to credit cards in college, and I wasn't the most responsible person back then.
Go, go, go!
I mean, I heard the words credit card and thought, hey, hey, free money! Plane ticket to spring break? Credit card. New skis? Credit card. 135 taco dinners? Bam! Credit card. But hey, it's not too late to do something about your credit. Get ScorePower from Equifax.com. ScorePower gives you your credit report, credit score, and it puts you on the road toward the credit you deserve for just $14.95. So, check out Equifax.com today and get that taco you ate 7 years ago out of your life.
Get ScorePower at Equifax.com or 1-877-4-EQUIFAX. That's EQUIFAX. Equifax.
Adios, taco.
Get the power. ScorePower.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, former congressional attorney Mark Levine, bringing you all the news from Washington the government does not want you to know. And we're talking about the details of the Newsweek story because the devil is in the details. Did you know the Joint Chiefs of Staff, the senior military officer in the United States, the position that Colin Powell once held, General Myers, said that, actually the Newsweek story didn't cause violence? Did you know that Newsweek hasn't retracted the idea that a Quran was thrown down the toilet, only that perhaps the senior official got wrong about where that was reported? Did you know all the detainees that said that a Quran was mistreated? Do you know about the U.S. policy of denigrating Islam, a general policy done to try to get people to talk? Do you really think some mid-level official in Cuba didn't think, we're already spreading menstrual blood on these people? What's throwing a Quran down a toilet for? Do you know these facts? And here at the same time, when you've got the Bush administration, whose own lies have been proved in a smoking gun memo that got no press attention or virtually none, they're the ones complaining that, someone should be disciplined, someone should be fired. The same administration that has promoted the people that lied to America hasn't disciplined or fired anyone involved with the tortures. Can this really be going on here? Am I living in Alice in Wonderland? Is everything topsy-turvy? This story amazes me. I do want to hear from you, though. The toll-free number is 877-57-SCOOP, 877-57-SCOOP. Caller, you're on the line with Mark Levine. Caller, are you there? Caller, last chance.
Yeah, this is Alice from Northern California.
Hi, Alice. How are you?
Well, okay.
What's your comment on this story?
The people of Iraq have many good reasons to hate us, and I doubt they even read Newsweek. It has something to do with us. They're stealing their oil with tanks and machine guns.
I think you make a good point. I think they do have tremendous reasons to hate us. We're occupying their country.
Yeah.
If you look at just the attacks against American soldiers, there are 5 times the attacks this year as there were last year. They want us gone. They don't want us occupying their country. We are gathering up people. Most of them are innocent. We are torturing them, not just in American prisons in Guantanamo Bay, but in Afghanistan and Iraq. We're also sending people to places to be tortured. And we are desecrating Islam. We're doing these weird, strange, sexual things that, frankly, I find embarrassing as an American. Yes, I think you're absolutely right. There's plenty of reasons to hate us. Now, don't get me wrong. I think that if the only reason were desecration of the Quran, I think they would have gone a little too far. I think that's you know, but you're right. There's plenty of reasons other than that. Thank you for your point. Do you have another question or comment?
No, no. Okay. Have a good day, Mark.
Thanks. I always appreciate your calls, Alice.
Yeah, okay.
Thanks
Bye-bye.
Again. If you want to call in, the toll-free number is 877-57-SCOOP, 877-57-SCOOP. There are a lot of details to this story, and the details matter. Let me just give you an example. When the protests happen over desecration of the Quran, or at least according to Chairman of Staff, Joint Chiefs of Staff Richard Myers, he read an after-action report by U.S. Army Lieutenant General Carl Eikenberry, the commander of the combined forces in Afghanistan. So the head military leader in Afghanistan indicated that political and violence was not, in fact, connected to the magazine report, wasn't connected to them at all. Indeed, this was, in fact, a protest for more political rights in Afghanistan. And guess what? The police in Afghanistan shot at the protesters. Now, I want you to think about this here. George Bush and his administration never condemned the police for shooting at the protesters. Who killed these 15, now they say 16 or 17 people? Who killed them? Did they shoot themselves? No, they didn't. The police shot at them, and the administration to this day has not condemned the police shooting at these protesters. What they've said is that Newsweek caused these people to protest and people died. Let me read to you McClellan, Scott McClellan, who's got to be the only BS artist better than Scott McClellan, the presidential press secretary, is probably Ari Fleischer, who was even better at it than Scott McClellan. Here's what Scott McClellan said, quote, "The report had real consequences. People have lost their lives. Our image abroad has been damaged. There are some who are opposed to the United States and what we stand for who have sought to exploit this allegation." That's what Scott McClellan said. That is a direct quote. This report had real consequences. Well, according to Joint Chiefs of Staff General Myers, the report had no consequences. So who is McClellan's source, right? If they're blaming Newsweek for relying on an anonymous source in the high government, I want to know who McClellan's source is. Who's his source? Have they asked McClellan that? Who's his source that people lost their lives? Why does he contradict not just our leading military official, General Myers, but also the head of the command in Afghanistan when he says, quote, "people have lost their lives"? And when he says our image abroad has been damaged, I have to laugh. Our image abroad was damaged when we entered this preemptive war, when we conducted torture on these people, when we desecrated Islam. And this report in Newsweek Periscope has damaged our image? Yes, there are people who exploit this. But there are enough truths, even if this report is entirely false, which frankly I doubt. But even if it's entirely false, there are enough truths that the radical Islamic leaders can exploit. They don't need this report. Is it torture of human beings enough? Again, I'm going to go to the calls. If you want to join in, it's 877-57-SCOOP. Caller, you're on the line with Mark Levine.
Hey, Mark, this is Steve in Atlanta. Long time to talk to.
Hey, Steve, how are you?
Good. I don't think I've heard you said this yet. Well, first of all, let me get it clear. Is McClellan the first person that said that linked this Newsweek report with the riots?
Oh, no, I'll tell you what happened. When the riots happened, there were some early news reports that did connect to Newsweek, not McClellan. And that's true. There were those early news reports. Then the Pentagon investigated, and that's where General Myers came out with this report by the head of the command, Eikenberry, saying there was no connection. And by the way, my source for this is none other than the State Department. All right, this,
okay.
this comes from usinfo.state.gov, and I'm going to quote from the State Department report. However, Myers said an after-action report provided by U.S. Actually, let me read to you a little bit longer from the report. The paragraph before says this. According to initial reports, the situation in Jalalabad, which is actually in Pakistan, there was more than one riot, began on May 10th with peaceful student protests reacting to a report in Newsweek magazine that U.S. military interrogators questioning Muslim detainees at the Guantanamo Detention Center had placed Qurans on toilets and in at least one case flushed a holy book. By the following day, the protests in the city had turned violent with reports of several individuals killed, dozens wounded, and widespread looting. However, Myers said an after-action report provided by U.S. Army Lieutenant General Carl Eikenberry, commander of the combined forces in Afghanistan, indicated that the political violence was not, in fact, connected to the magazine report. So in other words, there may have been a peaceful protest connected to the magazine report, but the violent protest had absolutely nothing to do with it.
So what happens is when you hear the White House just focusing on things like this, you got to ask yourself, you know, what news is out there that they're trying to kind of distract from?
Yeah. Well, that's exactly right.
And what is it, Mark?
Well, I think there are a lot of things. One, I think the nuclear option in the Senate is coming to a head. And
could
it's
be.
Where they're throwing out the rules.
That's not what I'm thinking of.
Oh, what are you thinking of?
I'm thinking of the memo, the British memo.
Well, yeah, but see, the British memo hasn't gotten that much press. I mean, I've reported it, and a few, you know, liberal radio talk show hosts, or not many of us, has reported it. But I haven't seen – the Washington Post finally, 2 weeks after it came out, gave it A18. And the LA Times also had it on the back page, and the story went away. My view, actually, is it's not so much that they're trying to hide the story of the smoking gun memo. I think if that story ever got a lot of attention, they would focus on it and try to hide it. I think it's just that any time they catch the media in the smallest of errors, it's a way of saying, look, you got to retract the whole story. We've been perfectly fine. We haven't mistreated Islam at all. It's a way of them using the tail to wag the dog and say, we've been perfectly fine.
Well, and another thing is, this kind of gave me the creeps, is when McClellan started saying things like, the media has to establish standards.
Yeah.
You know, in other words,
that's very Orwellian.
In other words, yeah, he's trying to establish controls on the media, which is not American.
Well, you know, they're doing this all the time. I mean, you look back at the huge scandal over Dan Rather's report. And the report was, in effect, that George Bush was AWOL. Now, that is undisputed. I got the documents on my website that show the exact orders that he was obligated to follow that he refused to follow. George Bush did go AWOL. Even the secretary who drafted those memos said that memos similar to the ones that were shown on TV were drafted. It's just that those particular memos were recreations of the original memos, not the original memos. That was the huge Dan Rather scandal. And yes, he made a mistake. He shouldn't have treated them as the original memos. But it took the focus off of the fact that George Bush violated a direct order from the National Guard.
Debate the source, not the content.
Exactly. Attack the messenger, not the message.
All right, Mark. Keep up the good work.
I appreciate it. And we're going to get to more of your calls. So hang on the lines, those of you that are hanging on. We do have to go to a commercial break, but we'll be right back. We're devoting the entire hour to this story, to bringing out some facts that haven't been brought out. And if you want to call in, you're welcome to do so. 877-57-SCOOP, 877-57-SCOOP, or comment on the blog at radioinsidescoop.com.
If you've been thinking about consolidating your federal student loans, it's time to call College Loan Corporation at 1-800-2-COLLEGE. You'll quickly be connected to an expert loan consultant who will explain the benefits of the consolidation program, including locking in the lowest rate in history, reducing your current monthly payment by up to 58%, and cutting down multiple payments into one simple check. For more information, call 1-800-2-COLLEGE. That's 1-800-2-COLLEGE. It's the smartest call you can make.
This is a financial update. Average mortgage rates took a slight dip this week.
Sorry to interrupt, but LendingTree.com is the only place where banks compete over your mortgage. Then you get up to 4 real offers to choose from within minutes. So do better and choose from low rates. Call LendingTree now at 1-800-555-TREE. That's 1-800-555-TREE. When banks compete, you win.
I know everything. Languages? Yes. Boiling points? Celsius and Fahrenheit? Yes. World capitals? Please. So, not too long ago, I tried to get a refi, and it got turned down. And this is the best part. The loan officer says to me, sir, do you know what your credit score is? So, I looked at her and said, tell me, do you know what the population of Liechtenstein is? Huh? Do you? She didn't.
Get in the know. Check out Score Power from Equifax. You'll get your credit report, credit score, and you'll learn how your credit decisions can affect your score, all for only $14.95. And knowing that is how you get the credit you deserve. So check out Score Power at Equifax.com or call 1-877-4-EQUIFAX. That's EQUIFAX. Equifax.
Well, now I have my credit score up to 760, the same number of days it took Frenchman Michel Lapointe to circle the globe on a bike. Yeah, I'll bet you didn't know that.
Get the power. Score power.
A message from the American Library Association and Bernie Mac about the hard times facing our nation's libraries.
Hey, I'm Bernie Mac. The libraries need your help. Many are forced to cut back hours, reduce services, and even close their doors. So what can you do? I tell you what. Support your local library and help keep your library doors open. Contact your local library to find out how you can make a difference in your community. The future is at your library, so make sure your library has a future. Just a little something from the Mac Man.
Brought to you by the Campaign for America's Libraries. For more information, visit the American Library Association website at www.ala.org.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, former congressional attorney Mark Levine, bringing you all the news from Washington. The government does not want you to know. I'm tripping over myself because I can't believe in this Newsweek story. Newsweek gets a very tiny item wrong in their Periscope section. They say that a senior military official said that allegations of destruction of the Quran are going to appear in a new military report. Then they check with him again, and he says, you know what, it's not in the report. I remember it happening, but it's not in the report, so I can't say that it is. Newsweek promptly retracts the story. And what does the administration say? Well, we've got Scott McClellan. What does he say? Quote, his report has had serious consequences. It has caused damage to the United States abroad. People have lost their lives. It has certainly caused damage to the credibility of the media as well as Newsweek itself. Pentagon spokesman was a little more direct. What did Larry Derrida say? Quote, people are dead because of what this son of a bitch said. Unquote. That's the Pentagon spokesman. I apologize for the language. I'm repeating the language of the Pentagon spokesman. People are dead because of what this son of a bitch said. Except it's not true. Is the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff a liar? Is the head of the command of forces in Afghanistan a liar? Why is the administration focusing on this? I'm going to take your calls. 877-57-SCOOP. Caller, you're on the line with Mark Levine.
This is Ed from New York, Mark. And I think the bigger story here is not so much the lie and the problem, but the fact that the Bush administration asked Newsweek to manipulate the news in replying to this particular story. This is the first time that I am aware of that a political organization has tried to dictate the news openly and blatantly to a nationally known news media. And that, to me, is an attempt to control the American press.
Well, I'll tell you, I guess I see it kind of two different ways, and you raise an interesting point. If Newsweek got a story wrong, then I don't have a problem with the government saying, hey, you got it wrong, you know, retract the story. But it does seem the administration is going further than this. First of all, an apology wasn't enough. They wanted a retraction. Now they've just said a retraction isn't enough. In fact, Scott McClellan is saying, no, the attraction isn't enough. We need something about media credibility. This is an administration that has done this kind of thing before. We have seen them pay off people who pretend to be journalists and go and give reports that people think are from unbiased sources. So manipulating the media is nothing new for this administration. What I think is new to me is the amazing hypocrisy of a president who 2 weeks ago, a smoking gun memo comes out. That, by the way, Scott McClellan has not commented on that memo at all. The memo shows that Bush fixed the facts around the policy, actually changed facts in order to get the war in Iraq he wanted so badly. And obviously that war has led to tens of thousands of lost lives. And this administration, which won't even count the Iraqi lives lost, is complaining about 15 people in Afghanistan and Pakistan that were killed because the police shot at a peaceful protest that we now know had nothing to do with the Newsweek article. I mean, when you add all the pieces together, it's amazing, really, the gall of Scott McClellan, or even worse, the Pentagon spokesman who used such harsh language. It really is shocking.
Well, the thing that is more shocking to me, and maybe I'm used to the administration trying to manipulate the news. I think, in fairness, other administrations, even Democratic administrations, have attempted to manipulate the news. But the difference here is the administration is trying to co-opt Newsweek to become a propaganda arm, and it's doing it openly and brazenly.
Yeah.
And to me, that indicates the feeling of this administration, whether it's with regard to the nuclear option or anything else. You know, everything's on the table with them in terms of we can destroy democracy to achieve the administration's goals.
They are drunk with power. There's just no other way to put it. They're drunk with power. Hey, I appreciate your call. You got one more last comment? Go ahead.
No, my only other comment was, maybe we needed a profile in courage here. The person who leaked the story to Newsweek ought to come out and say, I told the story and where I got the information.
Yeah, but you see, the problem with that is that whenever we have a profile in courage, whether it's Eric Shinseki or Richard Clark or Paul O'Neill, former Treasury Secretary, whenever we have someone telling the truth to the Bush administration, they get punished. They get thrown out, or their bosses get fired, or they somehow get punished. I mean, even the guy, remember, who told the truth at Abu Ghraib, he feared for his life from his fellow soldiers for reporting the truth about what happened. And so, you know, there's a reason why these sources are anonymous, because the administration refuses to investigate these things themselves. They could investigate this. They could investigate Quran desecration. They didn't. They could investigate how the intelligence was used in Iraq. But they refused to do that. They saw how it was collected, but they refused to investigate how it was used, because obviously it would implicate people at the very top of the administration. They didn't investigate the tortures at Abu Ghraib. The lower down prisoners were the lower down soldiers at the bottom of the line were punished. I mean, even Lindy England, as we know, they wouldn't even let her declare herself guilty because she'd gotten orders from above, but the people above, they're not looked into. So when you have an administration that's not investigating allegations of misconduct, and when they are firing truth tellers, these truth tellers have to be quiet. If the administration would come out publicly and investigate itself, you wouldn't need to have all these anonymous sources. So I tell you, I don't blame the guy for being anonymous.
Well, maybe I'm just a different type of person, but I tend to believe that, you know, sometimes people have to stand on principle, and if that means they get fired from their job, so they get fired from their job, but they need to tell the truth.
Well, you know, I think that someone in the media should be asking the Pentagon, why haven't you investigated these allegations of Quran desecration? Listen, thanks very much for your call. I do appreciate it. You know, the allegations of Quran investigation, again, they occurred long before now. They've been reported for more than 2 years in the British press, in the Russian press, in lots of Arab press, in Al Jazeera. But do you really think the mobs made a difference in understanding one source versus another source? I mean, we have literally dozens of detainees, dozens, saying that Qurans were desecrated. And maybe they're all lying. But all these lies and all these different places, when they're not allowed to communicate with each other, I mean, we know there's been widespread religious and sexual humiliation of detainees. We know it was a U.S. policy to make these people feel impure, to shake their faith, to try to get information out of them because of it. We know that's true. We have several detainees saying they witnessed the military police, the guards, throwing copies of the Quran on the floor, stomping on them, and yes, tossing them into buckets in areas used as latrines. We have a former detainee, Abdallah Tawarak, telling Moroccan newspaper that he often saw guards throw Qurans in the toilet. This is a direct quote from his article in the BBC. Sometimes the British publish things that our American newspapers don't publish. Quote, when I wanted to pray, they would burst into my cell with police dogs to terrorize me and prevent me from praying. They also would trample the Quran underfoot and throw it in the urine bucket. We staged protests in the prison about the desecration of the Holy Quran, so the management promised us they would issue orders to the American soldiers not to touch the copies of the Quran again. And guess what? The Pentagon did issue those rules on January 19, 2003. So what is going on here? And I got to tell you something. The Bush administration are not the only people at fault here. The Muslim population themselves, particularly those radical Islamists that are trying to rouse up the population, they're at fault as well. I didn't hear about many protests, and maybe our press isn't reporting it, but I didn't hear about many protests when Muslim men were tortured in our prisons. In Abu Ghraib prison, in Guantanamo Bay, in Iraqi prison, we tortured these people. In fact, according to one well-placed government source that I know and that I trust, and yes, is anonymous for obvious reasons, we have killed 2,000. 2,000 prisoners have died in our custody. And these are also not being investigated. Now, when all this happens, why weren't there more riots in the Muslim world? I'm not trying to encourage riots, but there's more than enough reason to hate the United States, as Alice points out, than the destruction of a holy book. And I have to wonder, and I'm going to broach this a little bit more after the break, but I have to wonder if it might not be the fact that in Arab countries all around the world, people are tortured, they are mistreated, they are murdered in prison, and so actually the Arab street, they've gotten used to torture and prison and mistreatment of human beings, but the one thing they don't do in Egypt and Saudi Arabia and Syria while they're busy torturing people, they don't throw Qurans on the floor. They don't flush Qurans down the toilet. Could it be that the Arab street is also more concerned with a holy book than human life? If so, then I have criticism for them as well, harsh criticism. Lives are simply more important than holy books. And I think it shows the mentality of these people if the protest is about the holy book. Now, to be clear, you know, again, General Myers says it wasn't. So, again, it's hard to know who to believe here, but I would think I'd believe the Joint Chiefs of Staff over the press secretary, Flack, Scott McClellan, any day. We'll be right back with more on this. If you want to call in, there's still 15 minutes left, or you can comment on the blog at radioinsidescoop.com. I'm going to be reading some of the comments on the blog and responding to them, and always you're welcome to call in. 877-57-SCOOP. We'll be right back after this.
Time for another Gooberhead Award, presented periodically to those in the news who've got their tongues running 100 miles per hour but forgot to put their brains in gear. Today's goober is H. Lee Scott Jr., and boy, is he hot! H. Lee is honcho of the ever-sprawling Walmart empire, and he recently threw a public hissy fit at all of you workers, consumers, neighborhood groups, taxpayers, environmentalists, local businesses, public officials, women's advocates, local newspapers, and gosh, so many more who've had the audacity to criticize the world's largest corporation. Walmart never does anything that isn't calculated, so even the honcho's hissy fit was carefully scripted. It came as part of a two-day media event for about 50 journalists who flew to the corporate compound in Bentonville, Arkansas. This was the kickoff for yet another multi-million dollar PR blitz to try buffing up Walmart's tarnished image. Indeed, its image is so tarnished that city after city, from New England to California, have been rejecting Walmart's attempts to bulldoze its way into their communities, specifically rejecting Walmart's low-wage, anti-worker, anti-neighborhood, predatory business practices. Rather than fix any of these practices, H. Lee lashed out at anyone who dares question how the $288 billion a year behemoth treats people and communities. He especially decried those of us who object to the $15,000 a year poverty pay that workers average there. He wailed that poor Walmart, the world's largest retailer, has such a thin profit margin that it simply can't afford to pay middle-class wages. This is Jim Hightower saying, before you weep for Walmart, consider that it raked in more than $10 billion in declared profits last year, and that its competitors pay up to three times the Walmart wage and still make a nice profit. In fairness, though, Walmart's generous to some of its employees. H. Lee pockets $4.7 million a year.
A message from the American Library Association and Bernie Mac about the hard times facing our nation's libraries.
Hey, I'm Bernie Mac, and libraries need your help. Many are forced to cut back hours, reduce services, and even close their doors. So what can you do? I tell you what, support your local library and help keep your library doors open. Contact your local library to find out how you can make a difference in your community. The future is at your library, so make sure your library has a future. Just a little something from the Mac Man.
Brought to you by the Campaign for America's Libraries. For more information, visit the American Library Association website at www.ala.org.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, former congressional attorney Mark Levine. We're talking about the Newsweek story, the retraction, and then the apology, I should say, and then retraction of really a small detail in whether or not the United States military threw a Koran in a toilet. It seems that they probably did, but it didn't appear in a specific report, and Newsweek retracted that story. Now, don't get me wrong. There's no question that on the other end, the radical terrorists, the Islamic leaders, are looking for anything to inflame the masses. I understand that. I do. But I also understand, as Alice pointed out, that there are plenty of reasons for the masses to be angry with us, totally apart from the Quran. I mean, you've got Abu Ghraib. It's really easy for those against the United States to get people whipped up in a frenzy, because obviously we've done a lot of things wrong here. People are full of resentment. As Hafiz Mansour, a conservative Muslim intellectual, said in the Washington Post, Afghans do not forget the past. They still remember the bombing of the wedding party, referring to a U.S. air assault on a village in 2002. So they're mad for lots of reasons. They're mad because in Kabul, people are drinking liquor. And they have girls showing certain, I guess their bellies, dancing on TV. So they're mad at U.S. military bases. And yes, the leaders are using the Quran issue to make the Karzai government in Kabul look weak. And he is weak. But the heart of the matter is the people believe there is a war against Islam. And, in fact, the administration has led them to believe that. Look, it's not just the fact that our president talked about a crusade against Islam. It's also the people who he hangs out with. Who are the right-wing nutcases that this administration refused to disavow? Let's look at someone like Ann Coulter. I mean, a nutcase, true. In fact, she's really a performance artist. I think it's pretty clear she doesn't believe in her harsh rhetoric. But which rhetoric takes more lives? Newsweek's question of whether a top official could confirm these allegations in one report or somewhere else, or Ann Coulter's comments that we need to go in, capture their leaders, kill their leaders, and convert the rest of them to Christianity. How do you think they treat that comment replayed repeatedly over Al Jazeera television? And what about the comic, the editorial strip in the Washington Times, the Mooney newspaper by Reverend Sun Young Moon that all the conservatives love, even though it's owned by a crazy cultist leader who calls himself the Messiah? They love it because it serves the administration and attacks liberals. Well, the Washington Times had a cartoon that went all around Pakistan and Afghanistan. It showed a dog, and the dog is capturing an Islamic terrorist, and the caption is, "Good dog, go get some more." Now, under Islamic law, a dog is an unclean creature, so it actually adds a further element. And this cartoon, didn't this cartoon cause more deaths than the Newsweek story? The point is not that we should in any way diminish free speech in this country. We understand that, yes, free speech does have consequences. It does. But we have Newsweek trying to do the best it can to get this story right. They've at least done a retraction. They've done an apology. We haven't heard anything from the Bush administration. Where is their retraction? Where is their investigation, as Newsweek did, into their story, into how the smoking gun memo says Bush fixed the facts around the policy, chose to go to war in Iraq first, and then later found facts to support it. Where's their investigation? Where's their retraction? Where's their apology? Now, I definitely condemn those in the Muslim world that treat a book as more important than a human life. Absolutely. They are looking for an excuse, just as the Palestinian leader Yasser Arafat looked for an excuse to begin the Second Intifada and chose Ariel Sharon going on the Temple Mount. I know they're looking for an excuse to inflame people. I understand that. But the bigger question is, how can this administration, full of its lies, ever claim that Newsweek caused deaths when we've had tens of thousands of lives lost due to the administration's lies? Let me read to you some of the things we have on the blog about this story, including one from a, let's put it charitably, an extremely right-wing listener. He says to me, Mark, you don't think Newsweek should apologize? You think it's fine to state the Quran was being flushed down the drain, even if it wasn't the case? No. It's not what I said, Edward. Should Newsweek apologize? Sure. If they got the story wrong, they should apologize. And they did. Is it fine to state the Quran was flushed down the toilet, even if it wasn't the case? No, it's not fine. But there's no evidence it was the case or wasn't the case. In fact, there's more evidence that it was the case than it wasn't the case. And Newsweek should investigate. Absolutely. But I think that actually, if you view the evidence, there's more evidence that it was flushed than there wasn't. In any case, Newsweek retracted the story. Again, Edward repeats the easily provable false statement that Newsweek caused 15 deaths. He repeats Scott McClellan's mantra, but we know that the Joint Chiefs of Staff has said to the contrary. Is the Joint Chiefs of Staff a liar? Is the commander in Afghanistan a liar? Does Scott McClellan know more than the head military guy in Afghanistan, Edward? Who's Scott McClellan's source? And see, the best part is when the right-wing crazies go and they try to say it's all a part of an intentional plot. Edward writes, is it an accident that Newsweek would go to press with this? Is it an accident? Who wrote the story, Edward? A guy by the name of Michael Isikoff. Who's Michael Isikoff? He's the guy that broke the Monica Lewinsky story. Well, he's hardly a left-wing radical, given that his story led to the impeachment of a Democratic president. Was this some intentional conspiracy here? It's amazing to me that the people who don't want to view all the smoking gun evidence that Bush lied to get us in the war somehow think there's a grand conspiracy when Newsweek does an investigation and retracts the story. He says, well, don't talk about Bush, it's a deflection. It's not a deflection, Edward, when you simply compare what they're saying. I mean, you've got the Pentagon spokesman saying that this son of a bitch caused people to die. 15. 1,000th, less than 1,000th of the number of Iraqi civilians that our son-of-a-bitch president caused to die. Again, if the writer of the Newsweek story is a son-of-a-bitch, if that's true, and I wouldn't use that language, but if that's true, isn't our president a greater one for using greater lies and causing greater deaths? It is relevant. The hypocrisy stinks. You got Edward Nygma saying Isikoff should be tried and then convicted, deported. That's an interesting look at free speech. But we've got some more reasonable people on the web, on the blog, people like Egrash, who writes, it was a terrible thing, almost unforgivable that Newsweek messed up on the story. The Islamic people just need one more reason to riot in the streets. But why did they take back the story? I find it hard to believe they aren't just being told to because of the craziness it caused. And some of the other things I've heard going about in that prison, such as the psychological torture by the women, I wouldn't be the least surprised if they were using the Quran for toilet paper. Look, one thing I think there is in common between the right-wing radicals in this country and the Islamic fanatics over there in Afghanistan, both of them seem to believe that the destruction of this book is more important than the human lives. And no, I'm not saying that Christians have rioted because their books have been destroyed. That's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is the administration takes no notice of any civilian lives lost. They won't even count them. We drop a cluster bomb on a wedding party, they won't even count the dead. The minimum estimates are 25,000, maximum 100,000 people dead. far more than the 3,000 killed on September 11th. The administration doesn't care about those lives, but suddenly the 15 people who were shot at by police because they may have participated in a protest about the Quran, suddenly their life is more important? The administration won't even condemn the police for shooting at a peaceful protest? Come on. The administration doesn't care more about the Quran than the lives. They don't care about either one of them. But if they can use the Quran, if they can use a small mistake in Newsweek as a way to justify controlling the press, calling the media incredible, again, Scott McClellan, the same guy that allowed gay prostitute Jeff Gannon to come in and take over with no press credentials at all, asked him all those questions. This same guy is attacking the credibility of Newsweek from an administration that cares not about American lives unless they can blame it on somebody else. I hope you've enjoyed this hour. I'll tell you, I'm still upset by this story because I think it's an example, just like Dan Rather, where this government is reaching its straws, grabbing at everything they can to try to justify their policies, where they use a little bit of truth to justify a massive lie. But that's it for the Inside Scoop for today. I hope you'll tune in Sunday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time for the Sunday Weekly Review. This is Mark Levine, signing off.